Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And Christmas!
Christmas!
This is Antiques Freaks. Ding. We're talking about Christmas shit.
Ding, 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 dingling. All these are copyrighted. I'm not finishing the song.
What are we talking about today? Christmas?
We're talking about Christmas!
Holy shit.
Picking up from last week's, talking about Christmas ornaments and sundry other tree-related decorations. Before all of this, and amongst all of this, betwixt all of this, one of the most popular decorations, candles. And when I say this, I mean regular ass, real ass, just a candle that is on fire that you put on a tree for some reason you thought this was a good idea. I don't know why, because Germany's not shot, they are not inured from the concept of forest fires. So why they thought, I know what I'll do, I'll put fire in the tree. That one thing that I know for sure burns? The wood? Yes, we'll be doing that.
Not even on a live tree, but on a tree I've specifically cut down and dried out and put into my house.
Yeah.
I'll put fire on that.
All over it. I want it to be the only thing. It's just covered in fire. I am not kidding when I say accidents and fires caused by candles in Christmas trees were a huge problem for a very long time.
I'm guessing it does a lot for bumping up the spontaneous human combustion numbers.
It sure does.
Massive air quotes around spontaneous.
Yeah, well, it was kind of less of a fucking magic problem. Magic, could you cut that? That's...
Nope.
Magic problems. In 1885, this is the worst one I could find. There's a lot of notable Christmas tragedies around the idea of live candles in trees. In 1885, an entire hospital in Chicago burnt all the way down because of candles on a Christmas tree.
Sorry. So you're in a hospital.
Yes, you are sick. Or perhaps you've just had a baby.
No, I mean, like, you're in charge of a hospital.
Oh, yeah.
You have all these sick people. You're like, man, it sucks. They have to be here over Christmas. We'll do something nice for them. We'll put up a tree. Great. What can we do to take this good thing and just ruin the fuck out of it?
We could set it on fire.
Let's do that.
Good idea, boss.
The best part is that our patients being bedridden won't be able to escape.
No. And this being 1885, our houses and buildings weren't built for a quick egress in case of an emergency.
They also weren't built out of non-flammable materials.
No.
And also, we don't really have a fire department as of yet.
Not really.
We've just got like a bunch of competing dudes with water trucks.
And also this is Chicago, which is huge. So even if we did, it'd be hard to get to us.
Also, Chicago isn't famous for not being on fire.
No. We're the most famous for being on fire, and I'll be goddamned if they'll take that away from us.
In conclusion, candles on the Christmas tree. Let's go.
It burnt down an entire hospital.
Fuck.
Not as a direct result, but as an ancillary result because this kept happening. Although, granted, in a less monstrous and gruesome fashion.
How do you not learn from the first one?
It wasn't until 1908 that insurance companies tried to get a law made that would ban candles from being used on Christmas trees. 1908 was the first year someone said, maybe we should stop setting the dead, dry tree on fire in our homes.
Electricity was an option by then.
It was.
Just saying.
Funny you should mention that. From an article on this issue. However, people still used candles to light Christmas trees, and there were more fires. Incredible. So the law didn't pass is what I'm trying to get across here. The law won't pass until, I want to say 1925. In 1917, a fire from Christmas tree candles in New York... 1917, almost 10 years
since... We absolutely had electricity. Electricity was a thing.
10 years after insurance companies got together and said, can we please stop dying in fires as a result of candles and Christmas trees? 10 years later, someone died in a fire as a result of a candle in a Christmas tree. And it gave shiny, bright-eyed, see what I did there? Teenager Albert Sadaka a fantastic idea.
I'm going to reinvent the light bulb for the third time.
So his family made wicker bird cages that lit up.
With electricity?
With electricity.
Amazing! Almost as though it was a well-established technology at this time.
So, he thought of using the lights in those long strings and suggested painting the bulbs bright colors like red and green. In the following years, after he came up with this fun idea, he and his brothers formed the Noma Electric Company, which became a very famous name in Christmas. So remember that. The Noma Company. We'll get back to them in a second. Noma.
My-hi.
Oh my god. It's, Maya, this isn't happening.
Maya,
oh, I'm in a time warp. I'm going back. I could go forever. Yeah. getting that idea. That is, of course, the hit song Dragosta Dinte.
Love amongst the linden trees.
Bothers me when people call it the Numa Numa song. It does have a name. Dragosta Dinte. Thank you.
I mean, everyone calls tub thumping, I get knocked down, but I get up again. So, like...
Well, because tub thumping's a dumb name.
Wow.
And as much respect as I have for that band, it's a dumb name.
And love amongst the linden trees.
Going back.
So sensible.
Going back to 1882, before all these horrible fires happened, or probably actually during.
I was gonna say...
Edison invented the light bulb and flashed it literally in everyone's face. So glad that joke landed.
The incandescent lamp with a carbon fiber filament.
I actually found out while I was looking into this that he literally covered his office space in light bulbs just to show them off. That's so boss. That same year, one of his close colleagues took the lights and put colored versions on his Christmas tree just to flex.
So you'll note that 1882 is before the hospital fire.
Well before. I think 20 years before.
Interesting.
Interesting. Fascinating. But Ken, you know hospitals don't make any profit off of... Anyway. So this caught on pretty well, because electricity caught on pretty fast. In terms of excitement, not necessarily implementation. The Edison Company went on to offer lighting services and rentals specifically for Christmas.
That apparently no one took advantage of!
Well, at the time, this is like 1883 when this is happening. So at the time, only the incredibly rich could afford to be electrified. I could have worded that differently, but no, I'm kind of glad I didn't.
It's great. It's great. It's good and you should feel good about it.
So at the time, the rental electricity service... What they were renting out wasn't the electrifying, but it was the strings of lights. It cost $300, which in today money was about $2,000.
I want to be shocked, but I know for a fact there are people today who spend the equivalent on, like, Christmas decorations for their house.
It's true.
So.
This would be a thing up until 1924, basically. Electric tree lights were widely known in the USA in 1895, because President Grover Cleveland had the tree in the White House decorated with the lights, because his young daughters thought they were great. They're still renting them at this point. Commercially available in 1924, the very first lights you could buy for yourself at $12, which I looked into was $100 in today money. Closer to $124.50 for a string of 12 lights. Cool.
12 lights that are, statistically speaking, much less likely to burn down your house and your entire family.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not a better investment. Because you could also rent them for $1.50, or $20 in today's money. Which is solidly middle-class behavior.
It's less than I spend on lights. For going full honesty.
So that's the story of Christmas lights, because it kind of just went on from there. The Noma Company ended up being one of the most notable Christmas light companies. And eventually they, as lighting tech got fancier, the bulbs got smaller until we have the fairy lights we're familiar with today. Noma Company also made another interesting... Noma Company was out here saving lives, is what I'm about to drop on you.
Not to be Captain Smartass, but I had gathered as much.
I don't know if they were doing
it... From the hospital fires and also the electric lights not causing fires.
So the thing with electric lights is that people still didn't stop using candles.
No. Why would you? When you have a clean, safe option... Stop using the incredibly dangerous option.
Well, because it was still a tiny bit pricey.
It is very pricey. Admittedly, it is incredibly pricey. However, I feel like a hospital, for example, might be able to scrape together the funds, especially for something as, like, with as much public goodwill behind it as, say, Christmas, might be able to scrape together the funds to get a non-lethal decorative option.
Ken's coming for y'all, everybody, from the 1800s through the early 1900s.
I'm coming to punch the Victorians in the face!
So, our favorite arson-inspired company, Noma. Back at it again. In 1946, admittedly a little bit late to stop the candle devastation, Noma introduced the bubble light, which was meant to simulate the candle in every way.
Including killing people?
No, in every way but that one. Thank you.
Okay.
bubble lights. Okay, full disclosure. These are one of my favorites because they are slightly bizarre, incredibly kitsch, and just vintage in a way that I don't think we're ever going to recapture. Let me tell you what it is. Bubble light is a decorative device consisting of a liquid-filled vial that is heated and lighted by an incandescent light bulb. Because of the liquid's low boiling point, The heat generated by the lamp causes the liquid to boil and bubble up from the vial's base, thus creating a decorative bubbling effect. So these had little dish bases and little glass vials, shaped like candles, filled with an oil that would bubble up.
These sound like very early lava lamps.
They are.
Nice.
Actually, bubble lighting had existed before 1946, and you could see it in a lot of early jukeboxes.
Hey.
And it was, of course, strictly decorative. There's really no practical application for any of this. You know, even down to the dishes, they were meant to simulate candles, so you could have that, like, old world feel. Plus the fun, sparkly bubbling.
And none of the old world death.
Well!
Uh-oh.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
No.
You might be asking yourself, what is this magical liquid inside these bubble lamps? Methylene chloride.
That sounds like a chemical.
Did you know that chemicals is made of chemicals?
Everything is chemicals, but this particular chemical from your tone and context seems as though it might be a threat to human life.
Methylene chloride has an incredibly low boiling point, as judged by the fact that a small incandescent bulb can set it aboil. Methylene chloride is incredibly toxic and vaporizes very fast. Methylene chloride is only separated from you and your lungs by a little glass vial.
Little glass vial?
A little glass vial. And the little glass vial is possibly also a carcinogen.
A carcinogen?
Yeah. A carcinogen emitted by the vaporize.
The vaporize.
Vaporized vapors. I stumbled on that one, but still.
I can't feel nothing at all.
Oh, you can feel cancer.
No.
Because it's a carcinogen.
No.
So not entirely the safest thing possible. And almost all of the liquid is methylene chloride, with few exceptions. Actual facts suggestion if bulb breaks is to evacuate for at least several hours until the vapors disperse. And possibly call a poison control team to ask how to dispose of it properly. Actually, definitely call a poison control line.
Absolutely.
And
call
ask
poison
how
control.
To dispose of it and if there's maybe any, if it's something that can be done or if you should get help.
Good to know.
Yes. So methylene chloride ain't nothing to mess with. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, everything on the tree is going to kill you. Was that what you were saying? I'm not saying it's likely, but it's possible that Christmas will kill you. There are a variety of older bubble lights that use oil or camphor, and you can tell those by the fact that when it is not heated, there are little oil solids here and there. These are actually very rare and more valuable. Because for reasons that, again, I couldn't quite get to the bottom of, a lot of these companies made a short run of these and then switched to methylene chloride. Which I don't get, because one of them was actually marketed with a specific kind of oil that gave it like a fizzling effect, like champagne, and that sounds very cute.
I want it!
Yeah, like, why didn't that catch on?
Because it, hang on, it, something, 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 something catch on fire.
Yada yada, arson.
If you take away nothing else.
God. Some of them even got shaped into fun figurals later in 1961. Example, a rocket ship bubble light and a shooting star shape from the Goodlight Company in 1948. These were really popular through the 60s because they had that sort of like, they had that future feel. These were actually popular pretty much until the late 70s when fairy lights caught on. Fairy lights, again, referring to miniature electric lights. After NOMA made them, and NOMA did introduce them for Christmas very first, 1946, patented by Carl Otis, other companies caught on very quickly and you get a lot of variety. Some of them almost all glass, some of them with lots of variations in the little plastic base that holds the bulb.
NOMA, NOMA, NOMA.
God damn it! I was just like, oh, Ken has something to say. He doesn't.
He's sorry.
He's singing hit meme song Dragosta Dinte. I'm not gonna let anyone forget that it's got a proper name. It's a really cute song. I actually really like it.
It's a very cute song. It's also a vintage meme, so it's on brand.
Spicy. We're gonna only give you the vintagest memes.
Sorry.
It's fine. Okay, so that actually gets some of our heavy hitters. I'm gonna talk about pretty much everything else. Oh god, I'm really excited about this one. I want to talk about tinsel.
So how is tinsel killing us?
It's not. Actually, tinsel, we're probably safe from tinsel.
Probably.
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 I don't trust it.
Actually, tinsel is well known for being able to be impacted in the guts in large quantities. So don't eat it.
everything is poison. Merry Christmas.
God, could you imagine having to get a tinsel bezoar cut out of you?
Absolutely.
You can't imagine that.
Yeah, I was four once.
Wow. You had a thrilling childhood from the sounds of it.
Are you saying you, as a child, as a toddler, weren't eating everything shiny?
No, I actually really specifically honed in on glass.
Okay, so you can see where maybe the health effects of tinsel are not quite as far distant as we would like to believe.
I'm just picturing you lying under a Christmas tree and snapping at it like a little cat.
You're not too far off.
Because the minute I said tinsel, I bet several hundred people just immediately, like, they looked at their Christmas tree and to make sure their cat wasn't eating tinsel. Because I just had it, like, I almost was like, is my cat over there eating the tinsel?
No, you're not in your house.
I'm not in my home. My cat is not here. Tinsel was also invented by Germany. They get all the fun stuff.
Well, they did invent Christmas, so.
Tinsel was originally thin strips of actual, real, honest-to-God, beaten silver.
Who the fuck just has that kind of... No, okay. So first, okay. What? No. In our previous episode, we went over how the Germans apparently just had enough food to paint it with lead and toss it into the woods once a year, every fucking year. Yeah, it's the middle of winter, the dead of winter, not the growing season, not the harvest season. There's nothing around from the wilderness, no bounty, but we sure do have enough overstock to just chuck our food into the woods, because Jesus. And now you're telling me they just had silver lying around! You know what? We just sure don't need our food. You know what we also don't need? Money. Fucking chuck that in the Black Forest while we're at it. What the fuck?
You're not even factoring the manpower to cut it into little strips and then hammer it thin.
What was anyone doing?
Acid, I guess? Like,
no!
Oh boy, okay. Oh god, you know this whole thing was worth it for that. Ken hates Christmas, take one.
It's Christmas, chuck everything in the woods. Empty the house. It belongs to the forest now.
God. So tinsel didn't really pop off until lighter weight, like tin, aluminum, and eventually plastic was invented. And all of these lightweight, cheap materials made them cheap, easy, and fun to put on a tree. Because fun facts about the hammered silver was very heavy. Ken is looking into the middle distance and shaking his head in disappointment at 16th century Germany. Well, get ready to cheer up again because tinsel has its own really fun Christmas legend. The Christmas spider. Ken is looking at me and moving his mouth as if he wants to say something but cannot make the words come. It's narration corner.
Praises be to the spider queen?
Praise be to the spider queen, mother of lusts and controller of our destinies. Full stop, I did not know about this beforehand. I am so delighted that it exists.
So tell me more about this Crimbo spider.
Every version of the story, I should say, involves a poor family who could not afford to decorate a tree for Christmas. Given that it takes solid silver, I guess I get that. In some more magical versions, the family actually grows the tree as if from a pine cone. Others just get a tree and bring it into the house like everyone else. When the children go to sleep on that Christmas Eve, a spider covers the tree in cobwebs to help them decorate. And the cobwebs are magically turned to silver and gold in the sun on Christmas morning because Jesus.
He did famously love spiders.
Jesus was always be like, love me a spider. Good times.
Everyone remembers the nativity scene. Three wise men.
Big spider. Yeah. Everyone forgets to put the spider in.
You know what we should do?
And it's gotta be like a dinner plate sized spider, like a Goliath bird eater.
No. All the Halloween shit's still on sale. So we go around, we put the spider back in the nativity where it belongs.
Where does it belong? In the creche?
In the manger.
In the manger. Yeah. Instead of Jesus.
No.
Is it cradling Jesus in all eight of its loving legs?
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Swaddled in spider webs.
It makes me sad that I've never seen a nativity scene from any of the spider keepers I know with their tarantulas in the scene. Because I would pay good money right now for like a calendar that had a Goliath bird eater over a nativity. Look those up if you want to be terrified, by the way. And I'm not even scared of spiders.
They eat birds, and their eyes are large enough that you can see them look at you.
Yeah, I hate it. Other stories say that it was St. Nicholas or Santa Claus or Das Christkind, which is, I guess, some German thing I don't know about, that sees the spider's kindness and makes the magic happen. In parts of Germany, Poland, and the Ukraine, it's very good luck to find a spider or a web in your Christmas tree, because of the story. Spiderweb Christmas tree decorations are also very popular in the Ukraine. They're called pavuchki, which means little spider, and the decorations are made of paper and silver wire.
How flammable are spiderwebs?
Not at all.
Really?
They're basically plastic, yeah.
Oh. Legend of Zelda lied to me.
It did. It's not easy to set a spiderweb on fire. Because it's like a mucus, sort of like a plasticky. It's like Kevlar.
Like silk?
Well, very much like silk, yeah. It melts, but it won't catch fire.
Interesting. So I guess it is a safer holiday decoration.
Yeah.
Than everything we've listed thus far.
So, safer things than candles. Electricity. Many, many, many spiders.
So, this year, consider covering your tree in live spiders.
For a festive touch, hey Martha, you want to pick this one up? For a festive touch, fill your home with live spiders. It's a good thing. All of our jokes aside, I actually think that is like genuinely the cutest thing I've ever heard. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that that's like a story out there. And I love tinsel more now. That is a magical spider's web. What?
We're recording this episode pre-Christmas, so I'm wondering if when I go home for the holidays, my parents will let me... Because, like, my mom's always like, do you want to help decorate the tree? And, like, I do have all of that, like, Halloween spider webbing.
Oh, and you can tell her the sweet little story.
Yes.
And she won't be like, could you stop being a goth at the Christmas dinner table for 5 seconds, please?
No, she'll still do that.
Man, doesn't she know that being goth is a finite resource? You can't just give it up. My parents just embrace it. I have like 3 spiders that I put in the tree every year, including a spider web that I made out of popsicle sticks. And yes, I was 25 when I made it.
Praises be to the Spider Queen.
Praise Belolf the Spider Queen. May she guide all 8 of our legs. Some other notable Christmas decorations, and there's a lot. 1950s cardboard figures, snowmen, reindeer, all sorts of other kitschy things. I don't really have to go into that. It is what it is. They're made of cardboard. Dresden ornaments. These are fascinating. They don't have a very long history, which is why they're fascinating.
Neither did Dresden.
And you've hit the nail on the head. Production stopped in the firebombing of Dresden.
And thus we got the Dresden dolls.
So 1880 to 1910, roughly, these were embossed cardboard colored gold or silver, or sometimes painted to match whatever figure role they were making. They tended to be really highly detailed. They were made in a molding process with, like, cardboard was different then. It was a more malleable kind of pulp. And so you could actually get a lot of high detail out of these, and they are revered for their very beautiful detail, but also their folksy charm.
So they're kind of almost more like papier-mâché in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, but a very durable papier-mâché. A lot of them have survived for a very long time, and they are, I've seen a couple, they're very beautiful. Dresden, unfortunately, never recovered from the firebombing, and so they never made a comeback.
We did get Amanda Palmer out of it, though, so...
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. And Kurt Vonnegut, but you don't like him much.
No.
There were baubles called indents. These were crafted specifically during the Victorian era so that the baubles could catch and reflect candlelight. So they were faceted, kind of. And you can still see them today.
Here's the fun thing about, like, faceted objects. They can catch light from any source, not just fire on your tree.
Well, the Victorians only had the fire. We'll give them some slack.
The early Victorians and the mid-Victorians, sure. The late Victorians had other options.
Yeah, that's true. Well, these indents were made early Victorian.
Fine.
So that they would sparkle because the Victorians were extra as hell and they wanted things sparkly. These actually made a comeback in the 1950s because they had that geometric goofy design that people in the 50s were very fond of. It said future. And yet it was from the 1800s, so like, okay. There is the putz, which honestly we could make an episode out of on its own, so I'm not going to get too far into it, but those are a, of course, German tradition of miniature Christmas villages. I, again, actually didn't know that that went farther back than Martha Stewart. I thought Christmas villages were a new thing. Turns out I was stupid wrong.
Oh, did you not hear the story behind the Christmas village at Yankee Candle?
Tell us.
It is properly known as the Bavarian Christmas village.
Oh.
Because the Yankee Candle guy went to Bavaria and saw a Christmas village and was like, I should put this in my candle factory. And because he was a candle millionaire, everyone else said, sure.
A candle millionaire, you say?
Yeah, dude.
He was burning down all those hospitals.
I don't think the Yankee Candle guy actually made all of his money from arson insurance payouts, but I think he just sold very smelly candles. But yeah, that's why when you go to the flagship candle store for candles, you walk through a Christmas village with fake snow falling from the ceiling onto the fake cobblestones on the floor below, up to the moat of a castle, because they built the entire facade of a castle into their candle store, and then you cross the drawbridge and walk past the life-size suits of armor to enter Santa's toy workshop in this candle store.
Man, I can tell that you had a great time working for Yankee Candle.
It was amazing. No regrets except for the tendonitis.
Man, Yankee Candle just goes off though, huh?
They go so fucking hard for these candles.
I mean, hey, they're a classic.
And a fire hazard.
That too. So putzes are also like roughly based around by and inspired the commonality of the nativity scene. This is sort of an aside, but in Portugal, we have the Presépios, which is a nativity scene that goes ham wild everywhere. Oh my God.
Is it Portuguese for spider?
No, it's Portuguese for nativity.
Oh.
It's not a Portuguese word in the word nativity. We had to have our own. Nativities in the Presépios started out as regular nativities that were in like a town center because this is a poor person thing, like a lot of things are. They actually over time evolved culturally to most of them are actually sometimes painstaking copies of the town itself.
They would.
It's incredible. Every year at La Salette, they have one of the biggest on display of a little town in the Açores. And it is incredible to think that, like, and the town comes together to make this, which is, I don't know, something about that is just really nice.
It is very inspiring, especially as someone who has failed to collaborate on many a gingerbread house.
God. You said that like it was such a personal failing of yours. Like, dude, we can make a gingerbread house. Do you want to make a gingerbread Victorian?
Here's the thing.
What?
After you make a gingerbread house, you are left with a gingerbread house.
Crunch.
No.
You crunch.
Absolutely. Have you ever eaten gingerbread?
Yeah, I crunched it.
Okay, you can crunch the whole house then, because I can't stand molasses, man.
My dude, I ate a prepackaged gingerbread house once.
My God.
Uh-huh. I ate the whole danged thing. Crunch.
You just love that molasses, huh?
I tried to eat our friend's dad's cardboard gingerbread house.
I thought that sentence was going to end with, I tried to eat my friend's dad.
You can't prove I didn't.
True.
Try. I didn't eat him. He's still there. So there you go. So there's that.
What the fuck were we talking about?
Christmas ornaments.
Right. Okay. Sure.
I'm including a little section on homemade ornaments because I love these. There was the foil-covered handmaids from the World War II metal shortages. Because people still wanted sparkly, beautiful Christmas things, they kind of just made their own. And it was crumpled foil or foil wrapped over, like, molded paper, paper mache kind of thing. That's cute. Salt dough is the one I'm most familiar with, and probably a lot of people who grew up poor. That's exactly what it sounds like. It is a moldable dough that you can make from, like, salt, water, and baking soda.
And it also looks a little too much like gingerbread in my experience.
Oh, that's why he doesn't like gingerbread. Because another thing about salt dough is that it tastes like salt.
It tastes awful, yes. Not at all like a cookie, even though it looks exactly like a cookie, and we've iced it like a cookie, and we've baked it like a cookie, but it's not a cookie, and when you try to eat it, your teeth break.
Yes. Yes. It's also incredibly durable.
So yeah, I know. My teeth can attest.
It outlasted your teeth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's incredibly durable.
I actually, I do have an ornament that my mother made when she was 5. It is still in the family.
Aww.
And pretty much undamaged. It's a little bird.
That's cute.
There's also the Sebnitz, which is a German tradition.
For 7 nights?
Is that what that stands? No.
Here's the thing. Everything I know about German I learned from Rammstein, so it's mostly searching for homophones.
No, night is Nacht.
Damn.
Sebnitz is like seven... I don't know German. I'm just gonna say that. The Sebnitz is also a very valuable, very comparatively rare. It is a handcraft ornament. It is made from wire, cotton, leftover holes that are punched out of sequins, wax, Dresden ornaments, aluminum, cardboard, beads, celluloid paper, pretty much whatever is lying around as a result of larger manufacturing processes.
So it's made out of mommy blogging.
It is, but this is like the original. Well, this is what you call a cottage industry. This was Etsy, but in the 1600s.
1600s Etsy, got it.
Well, yeah, it was these people who were just doing crafts for fun who would later go on to sell some of them. If you look up Sebnitz, and I do recommend it, they are elaborate. They are absolutely beautiful, completely unique, no two the same. They were very popular in the 1800s, despite the fact that I said 1600s. That note was after I made that joke. they tended to be, you know, sleighs, nativity scenes, little wax babies, windmills, cradles, little spiders. Spiders actually did factor into some of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I love this.
Later, there were little deer, when deer got associated with Christmas for whatever reason.
Aw. Reindeer, my dude.
That wasn't until, like,
they live up
Washington Post.
They live up north with the ice and snow.
You want to sing the song?
No.
Okay. Sebnitz is just like a formal term for these like really elaborate German handcrafts. My favorite detail is that they use the leftover bits that are punched out of sequins.
So glitter, essentially.
Essentially, well, yeah, but like it's reusing, it's a repurposing.
Yeah, recycled glitter.
It's mommy crafting. Mommy blogging, is that what you called it?
I called it mommy blogging because I was being dismissive.
That's rude.
And cruel. Cruel and dismissive.
There were celluloid ornaments, which sounds terrible after we've discovered all the different ways things could catch fire in your home as a result of Christmas.
So let's just take our celluloid ornament and put it, along with the fire, on this giant piece of kindling.
Yes.
And go to bed.
Oh, you're gonna love the next kind. Cotton batting ornaments.
What? No, stop it!
Much like needle felting, they were just piles of cotton batting that were pressed together and sewn into shapes.
Stop it!
They were also flammable.
Yeah, no shit! No shit!
This whole episode is actually just a list of things you could catch on fire for Christmas. Cotton batting ornaments were actually pretty popular because you could hang them on the lower parts of the tree and not worry about your kids cutting or breaking anything.
Sorry, sidebar, you know how Thomas Kinkade is the painter of Christmas, yeah?
Oh, just not just light? Christmas too?
Yeah, and you know how famously the only way to get the kind of glow he gets on his cottage windows, the interior of the house would have to be fully ablaze?
Yeah! Shit!
I feel like I've solved this art riddle.
Oh my god, the mystery solved! Thomas Kinkade was actually the painter of arson. John Orr, eat your heart out. Thomas Kinkade is here to burn you out.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. We do this every... I was just like, cool, it's a light episode. I can't ruin this one with me. And I did it anyway.
I feel like I helped. I feel like I helped ruin Christmas.
If you're getting bummed out, just go back to the part where I'm talking about the spiders. But after the part where I talk about a spider so big you can watch it watch you. That just hit me what I just said.
If you're feeling a little down, just return to the 8 comforting legs of the arachnids.
Let them wrap them around you. Let their many eyes swivel to you chillingly in this time of need.
Feed them a bird.
Because it's big enough. Where was I?
Oh, ruining Christmas.
Combating ornaments, which can also catch fire. Okay, well, no. People made these because your kids could play with them and you could hang them lower on the tree and have them be safe. As a result, these are also pretty rare because anything kids played with tended to be destroyed. There are dioramas. These started in the 1950s and were popular up until the 1960s. They are what they say on the tin. Tiny little scenes contained in shapes.
Oh, my mom has one of these. It's a seashell, and in the hollow, there's, like, cotton batting for the floor, and then a little, like, deer figurine with the tree.
That sounds cute as hell!
It's very cute.
Oh my goodness.
It's one of the favorites that I will soon be replacing with spiders.
Put a spider in there with a deer. actually, dioramas are absolutely one of my other favorites. Spun glass ornaments, which refers to two things. There is probably the spun glass you're thinking of, which is glass, spun, and I don't really know how to describe it past that. Can you help? You're usually good when I stall out of describing something.
You take a glass and you spin it.
It's like wire shaping, but with a glass rod. And then you get a pretty thing. It's not what we're talking about here, although that's also a viable ornament. There's not a lot to say about it, it's just something glassmakers made. Spun glass I'm talking about is also referred to as filament. If you've seen fiber optic,
The spindly bits.
The really spindly, fluffy, swingy bits.
Not unlike spider webs.
Not unlike spider webs. Fiber optic lighting used to be very kitschy in the 90s, I remember. It's also a popular way to deliver an internet ISP. Oh god, I'm stalling again. Oh my god, I need you to help me with the spend glass in every way. How do you tell people about fiberglass?
I feel like if they're alive to listen to this podcast, they probably know.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, it was like thread, but springier.
Glass.
It didn't feel like glass. I've touched it. Probably a bad idea, honestly. I wouldn't touch it. It was used to make halos for angels, boughs on little trees. Usually these would actually have like these lithographed tin pieces in the middle and then have the spun glass like accenting a part of it. My favorite usage of this, the bird ornaments. My mother collects these.
As does mine.
Oh, really? Oh my god, we gotta get our moms together. The little clip-on mercury glass ones, right?
Yeah,
so they're shaped like birds, all sorts, swans, little sparrows. I've seen like big ugly geese and like things like that.
Peacocks,
those are
with feathers.
With big feathers. And usually they would have the spun glass tails. I've bought a lot of them without them and replaced it with actual fiber optics, which is actually a pretty good replacement and technically also glass. But those are my favorites. There was Czech beaded ornaments. They're unusual.
Oh, Czech like from the Czech Republic.
Yes. Oh, sorry. I was about to clarify. Czech like from the Czech Republic.
Cool.
These were made largely in 1845 to the 1940s. They were two-dimensional designs at first, and they were made from glass beads strung on wires and shaped. Earliest ones were kind of 2D shapes, so just like flat.
Kind of like the perler beads of today.
Yeah, but real blown glass beads, which is really cool. These became very quickly very popular with the Victorians, again, because they were super extra. In the 1920s, manufacturing technology got really crazy. Elaborate 3D designs, fruits, butterflies, and specifically, zeppelins.
Speaking of shit that catches on fire.
Yeah, I guess, like, if you didn't have enough candles on your tree, you could put a zeppelin and remember another big, horrible, fiery tragedy.
Yay!
Christmas! In the 1930s, things went off the chain. Oh my god. Incredibly elaborate 3D designs. Bicycles that worked. People. Spinning wheels. Cars. Bigger, better zeppelins. With little fiery beads coming out of them. Like, anything. Just household objects just to flex that you could make this out of these wired beads.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely, please look up Czech beaded ornaments. They are amazing.
So if I want to start collecting ornaments, how much of my Christmas bonus am I losing to this?
It depends on what you want to focus on. If you're just going with little glass ornaments, not a lot. Those actually start from a couple of bucks an ornament. Box of shiny brights will probably set you back something like 10 to 50, depending on design and condition and original packaging. I personally bought a lot of shiny brights for like 15 bucks a box, so not too bad. As you step up, things get more expensive, of course. Figural glass balls do get more expensive, but by that I mean like $15 to $20 a piece. Not horrible. Best figurals are animals and celebrities. I've never actually seen any of those, but I'm told that you can buy one that looks like Woodrow Wilson, which is like, that's gotta be hilarious. So, you know, the more interesting the shapes, of course, the higher the value. Of course, condition is everything. Once you start moving up, bubble lights kind of become the next step. A full box of those will run you probably like 80 bucks. Individuals and strings, maybe like 20 again. So a lot of this is really good to get in on the ground floor. Things don't really start hyping up until you get into the weird stuff like Dresdens, Zebnitz, fancy putzes. God, I'm gonna have to learn German to properly study Christmas.
I majored in Christmas studies.
Majored in Christmas. The Czech beaded ornaments get very expensive very fast, starting at around $50 and going up from there.
I mean, it sounds like an intense lot of handwork to make those.
That's the thing, is the price is directly correlated to how much handwork goes into it. Like, the Czech beadworking process was laborious, incredibly laborious. There were at least 4 different industries involved at any given time. That's not counting the exporting.
Damn.
Yeah. And of course, with a lot of these, same thing. Some of the really older blown glass balls, those were all made by hand. Kugels are pretty much the crowning glory. Yes, the Kugel balls, as we discussed in the last episode. Kugel balls being the oldest, the biggest, the brightest, the heaviest, the fanciest, they start at 100 and I've seen them go for thousands.
You can probably only afford those if you're a billionaire.
Probably, but then you can afford electricity.
And a private helicopter to crash. In the middle of the second movie.
Oh, there, no, that's reason. Where you were going. Nice.
Where else would I go with the Kugel balls, D?
To the fancy masquerade party?
God damn
it. At Mr. Gray's Manor? Yes, for all our ragging, we have Reddit.
We have not read it. We have watched it.
That's right. I only read the first one. Vintage tinsel, also cheap. Lights, not too bad, actually. For a vintage set of Noma lights, maybe run you back $40.
Maya.
Thank you. The bird ornaments that I mentioned earlier, they actually not too bad. The really rare examples, the peacocks with their feathers intact, that can get to about 75. Most of them are about $20. And less if you're willing to replace the tails. So what attracts people to Christmas decoration collecting a lot is actually very easy ground floor to get in on. There's a lot of it, a lot of it's cheap, and it's easy to amass a really fun collection quickly and without losing too much of your Christmas bonus.
Cool.
And there's a lot to learn. Oh my god, it's a huge and very well-populated field with a lot of people who are very excited to share their knowledge with you.
Yay!
It's, I would call it a community.
Christmas community.
A Christmas community.
By the end of this, we're going to end up writing for Hallmark.
Oh my god. This, I could see a really nice little, like, romance about Christmas collectors.
Collecting vintage Christmas.
Collecting vintage Christmas, and, like, you know, of course it's Hallmark, so she's got to be, like, a big city gal, and, like, she doesn't get Christmas. But so she meets this guy and he introduces her to like all of these sweet concepts from like vintage Christmas before it got like commercialized too much.
Tarantula farming.
And he's a tarantula farmer and all of his Christmas trees are just spiderweb and she gets stuck in it and she's screaming and she's screaming and the spider's coming closer and closer.
And you, it's huge. You can see its eyes swiveling around to its prey.
You're watching its pedipalps just like gyrate and its little horrible mouth. And stop being a Hallmark movie, I think.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry,
and on that note, Merry... No. Get sources.
Okay. Sources for Christmas.
My Hallmark movie about a man who entraps a woman with a promise of a cutesy Christmas and kills her with spiders.
Tarantulas don't eat people, they just eat birds.
True. They eat whatever they can fit in their mouth, which doesn't count people.
Spider sources.
Spider sources include whychristmas.com. It's a great website.
The eternal question.
realorrepro.com/article/christmas-kugels. countryliving.com/shopping/antiques. You know what? Just Google country living vintage ornaments. I think that's enough of a plug for them. All right, and this is the big one. goldenglow.org vintage Christmas collectibles. They have, I've cited bubble lights specifically because that's mostly what I used. They have a beyond excellent index of collectible Christmas things, all of them, way past just ornaments. Price guides, rarity guides, determining reels from repros, and access to a huge community of people who love this stuff. Goldenglow.org, its full title is The Golden Glow of Christmas Past, is absolutely your one-stop shop for vintage Christmas stuff. And it's a really nice website on top of it, which I can't say about a lot of them.
At the end of the Spider Hallmark Christmas, she goes back to the big city full of new ideas.
And spiders.
And they repurpose all of the Halloween decorations for Christmas, doubling profits, and she takes all that money and brings it back to the small town to reinvigorate its economy with spider breeding.
Wow. You took a weird idea and made it weirder.
The true spirit of Christmas.
Many, many spiders. I thought you were going to say she comes back to the big city full of spiders.
All that too. She's also absolutely just chock full of spiders.
She is just like a horde of spiders, roughly in the shape of the woman.
It's just 80,000 spiders in a trench coat.
It's me, Cassie. Merry Christmas.
I don't know what 80,000 spiders would sound like. Probably that.
Jittery, I'm imagining. So yeah, if you want more of this nonsense, if you would like to talk with us more about Spider Hallmark Christmas, get in touch with us, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, or you can check out our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, which I'm assuming after this episode will be full of spiders.
It will be full of spiders, much like my heart.
We also have an Etsy shop, etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
Guaranteed 100% spider free.
Full of vintage goods and t-shirts and stickers soon.
Which none will ship with spiders.
You can also check out deleted scenes on our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month, guaranteed spider free.
All of our mailing services, 100% spider free guarantee.
Because we're hoarding all these spiders for ourselves. We don't just give these spiders away.
Yeah, we're gonna make it big in the city. Didn't you just hear?
Thank you to all of our current patrons for supporting the podcast, paying our hosting fees, and someday, God willing, getting us a second microphone.
Which also doesn't have spiders in it.
We need a second one because the first one is full of spiders. And thank you to everyone for listening, especially you. Yes, you. Specifically you. We love you.
The spider listening to this. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Whatever you celebrate, we love you all the same.
Bye.
Bye.